Ray Long is here, investigative reporter from the Chicago Tribune, award-winning investigative reporter, former State House chief down at the State House in Springfield for Chicago Tribune. Ray, great to see you, man.
Good to see you.
It's been a while since you've been on, and I'm always great to read your byline in the paper and to talk shop with you. Springfield has become the story this month, and it's interesting because in the last couple it was Chicago. It was Chicago, all Chicago politics.
Right.
But Springfield is heating up. Today is no exception. We actually talked for you to come in before this story broke, but
right.
Former state representative Luis Arroyo, who had stepped down because of bribery allegations, looks like he's going to plead guilty in court.
Yeah, it looks like it. What they did today is the prosecutors filed what they call an information, which is basically a charge, and it's a new piece of paper following his prior charges that they filed. This is a signal based on all the observers, including our good guy down there, Jason Meisner. As Meisner wrote in his story, hey, this is a signal that usually says that they're going to plead guilty. So what happens is it looks like Arroyo probably has been doing some negotiations.
Mm.
What that means, we don't know yet. But when there's negotiations, a lot of times there's information flowing back.
Yeah, obviously, there's paying attention to that because he was caught up in a lot of the corruption charges in the last couple months, all around, like with Danny Solis and others.
Right.
There are a lot of different people who may or may not have been wearing a wire. Mike Madigan's involved in this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Why is Arroyo in hot water? What did he do?
Well, one of the weird things here was this case that he's involved in, and he was pushing these video sweepstakes ideas, and he wanted to push some legislation through while he was a House member, and he approached Terry Link. Terry Link's a senator from Vernon Hills area, Waukegan area, and he has been a big pro-gambling guy. He's been one of the front men on the whole expansion of gambling for a couple of decades,
yeah,
really.
Right.
And so what happened was Arroyo ended up offering a Link a bribe.
You never see that. That's so strange. A representative actually offering another lawmaker a bribe.
Right. Now, it says in the court papers, it just says another lawmaker, right? But some of the good reporting that's been done by the Tribune and other outlets has pushed it back to Link. Link denies it. But it's pretty solid indications there, or we wouldn't be writing it.
Mm.
So he offered a bribe, and when you're caught on tape, that is a very special thing for the prosecutors anymore. They love that tape stuff. You remember with the Blagojevich stuff,
yeah,
they were digging through all the different paperwork with all these different bad hires and all kinds of other violations. But when they caught Blagojevich on tape, man, they went for the golden the golden opportunity.
Well, okay, so it's one of those cases where you rarely see, because it's reverse bribery, right?
Mm.
Usually we get a lawmaker who's taking a bribe from somewhere to some piece of legislation.
Yeah.
Is there precedent for this kind of thing another lawmaker? It seems like I wouldn't even know what to do if you were the feds, right? You'd be like, I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they must have been thinking this was a possibility, or they wouldn't have wouldn't have done it in the first place. But the unusual nature of this is something that I haven't seen. I've been covering state politics since 81. I can't remember a time when there's been a lawmaker-to-lawmaker bribe done, at least in the last few decades.
So when you see this kind of thing come out where mm-hmm. there's a new quote-unquote charge. What was it called? It's called a...
Oh, it's...
Not a charge, but it's a whatever.
Oh, it's an information.
An information.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Usually that means that the person who's pleading guilty and negotiating with the feds for something.
Yeah.
What would it be? And I know you're a reporter. You don't know what it is. But there's so many people that are swept up in everything
right.
that's been happening in Springfield.
Right.
Is he cooperating? There's now I see on Twitter pictures coming out with him, you know, close to other lawmakers who've been corrupt in the past.
Sure, but you know, one of the things is with Springfield is that everybody knows everybody down there, and you're going to end up with in a picture with somebody that you probably wish you hadn't been. You know, somewhere in the archives, there's a picture of me and George Ryan and Wayne Newton. Or I hope they're no longer in the archives anyway. But, you know, it's a just a place where you're going to run into people. So the reality is that if somebody's got something to give and they think that they can lower their potential sentence, they may just pony it up. And we don't know exactly what Arroyo has.
What a turn of events, because up to this point, will this... You know, with when you have this kind of thing and you plead guilty, is more information available for reporters? I don't know how it works. Like, when you plead guilty, do you automatically now have more access to the evidence that has been?
Well, they will file another brief, and that brief should walk us through whatever else he has given up, or at least whatever else he'll admit to in court. And it may be other crimes. It may be more than just that one charge, but this is what he's pled down to.
Right. So the bottom line is, if Arroyo shows up at your, if you're a lawmaker and you got a Super Bowl party, he shows up and he's like, "Hey, what's going on with that?" Who knows what he's got underneath his shirt? There.
Right. Right. Well, that
seems like maybe it's, I don't know. That's just my thought on that. Ray Long's with me, an investigative reporter from the Chicago Tribune, talking about all things Springfield. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. I want to talk about Mike Madigan and the money he's spending on lawsuits out of his campaign chest. Ed Burke doing the same thing, by the way. And also, just, you know, the story that broke last week about the quote-unquote rape in Champaign. You did a great story on this.
Thank you.
That did... it's shown a big light on what might possibly be referring to, and it's much different than I think what a lot of people thought. So, Ray Long, our guest tonight on 720 WGN. We'll take a break. Stay with us. All right. Ray Long in studio. Justin Kaufman here on 720 WGN. Ray Long, the investigative reporter from the Chicago Tribune. He in studio tonight to talk about some stories that are happening in Springfield. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Let's start with House Speaker Mike Madigan.
Yes, sir.
This story came out about the money that he is spending on his own legal defense, and this is for lawsuits and other things, but his campaign war chest, $440,000 in the last quarter?
Yeah, $445,000. Right. Well, let's break it down, because those numbers came rolling out real late. I guess it was Thursday night, and we were thinking, now, what could this be? Could this be something, you know, with everything swirling around, could it be something? But we didn't want to push the button until we actually knew what was going on. And how it broke down is, you'll recall that there was a case involving alleged sexual harassment of one of Madigan's aides named Kevin Quinn. A woman named Elena Hampton had been a campaign worker, and she had texts and all kinds of information that showed that Quinn had been pursuing her aggressively for some time. And so she called him out, and then she ended up, she felt, booted to the side and didn't have a chance to advance, etc. She filed a retaliation suit, and then they eventually decided to settle it.
She was on with us. She came on with us, and she came on this week, but I've had her on the show before. Her biggest accusation was that it was brought to the speaker's attention, and he says it never happened, but she said, yes, it did, and I sent stuff to your house and other things, and she never got any response from it.
Yeah, she sent a mailing to him explaining why she left the organization, and he sent one of his people to investigate, and they talked, and Elena Hampton doesn't feel that it was a complete investigation, etc. The Madigan folks felt that they were pursuing it adequately, but eventually it did end up in court, and eventually
the
day after Thanksgiving,
$445,000 in legal fees.
Yeah, well, that's not
the settlement money. That's something different.
Well, actually breaking that down, $275,000 of that is the 445.
Really?
It's part of the 445, yeah.
So by state law, that can come out of campaign chest money?
She sued, as part of her suit, she was accusing some of the political committees,
yeah,
right?
Okay,
so,
right.
So they were paying, and that's how they pay the legal fees, too, is they pay. So, in addition, we've got three or four, well, Madigan's people, his lawyers, had legal fees too that he paid out of that, and then he's got a couple other cases. You know, the case involving David Krupa, the 19-year-old college kid from DePaul who ran against. Actually, that's a different one. We'll get to the sham candidates here in a minute.
Right.
The David Krupa one was the one who ran against Marty Quinn, Madigan's handpicked alderman in the 13th ward, and they've got a couple of suits going over there on that. They argued in that case that you'll recall this one is kind of a head scratcher too, where they Krupa went out and collected like 1,700 signatures on his petitions, way past the number that you need, and then Marty Quinn used a very unusual quirk in the law and went out and collected something like 2,700 signatures of people who said that they would revoke their signature on Krupa's petitions, and that's like 1,000 more people than actually signed Krupa's petition.
So, you know, I'm not a math major, but that doesn't work out.
Yeah, right. Even I had a little trouble with that one. But, you know, so then we have that other one where in 2016, there was a guy named Jason Gonzalez who ran against Madigan, and he got trumped by Madigan, but there were two other candidates on the ballot then, and Gonzalez said that they were shams. They've denied it, but they didn't raise any campaign money. They didn't spend any campaign money.
They had Latino last names, and the goal was that they would split the vote, and they were purposely, allegedly propped up by the Madigan camp.
Allegedly put up as shams.
That's a Chicago machine move, man. That's old school. That's like right out of Boss. That's a classic move.
Yeah, so he took it to court, and they, you know, they battled that back
again,
and forth, and it's been tossed, but there's still some pending action. Well, there's still some pending action there, too.
All right, the other story, that's amazing to me. All the shenanigans that are happening just in those three stories.
Oh, yeah, so we could do a whole show on any of those.
The other story that last week I had Tinas Fondelis and Amanda Vinicky in here were talking about that bombshell WBEZ piece about the email that Mike McLean, the lobbyist, the powerful lobbyist and friend of Mike Madigan, sent. And in it, he said he was advocating for a state worker, and he said he kept his mouth shut about the rape in Champaign. It got everybody, oh my Lord, we were all like, what does that mean? There should be investigations. The House Republicans are asking for everyone's asking for investigations. He put out a story on Saturday that actually started to connect the dots to what he was referring to. What was he referring
to? Well, what we think, at least the investigators believe, is a possibility is the same thing that we came out with. I didn't get involved in that story initially until like Wednesday, when it had reached a real fever pitch. And so we thought the missing piece was, what is it? Who was it? What is it? And like you said, imaginations were running wild. So we made a few calls, got onto the idea that it could have been an early release of a prisoner who
and
got
didn't even
out.
Think about that, right?
Yeah,
right.
Everybody figured it must be some
like a cover up of a rape that didn't get convicted, right?
Right, right. And it turns out that one of the things that we have discovered, and one of the things that investigators have discovered, is that there was a guy who had gotten out of prison early, and under the Quinn administration. It wasn't one of his famous MGT push programs that was messed up and had to be redone. But it was a different early release situation. This guy got out. His name is Scott Thompson, and he went and was then convicted of sexual crime against a small child, girl in Champaign County. So he would have gone back. He did go back to prison. He got sent back in the system, and he's now in Rushville, which is a system that's set up for sexual criminals.
So the cover up when they say he kept his mouth shut about the rape in Champaign was to, it would be bad press for the governor to have an early release prisoner in his program go out and creates or make such a heinous crime,
right,
and go right back into the system. And so they knew it happened, but they didn't want the press or alert anybody that it was happening.
Yeah, if that is the case.
If that's the case.
If that's the case. And that's one scenario that's being reviewed.
It's plausible.
Yeah, and so if that's the case, then we've got something like, you know, it could have been an explosive charge. Quinn was already having problems. It happened while Quinn was in his election mode in 2010. This was right after Blagojevich got tossed. Quinn came in 2009. He was running in 2010 for governor. And so then he had this one crisis with early release. In fact, one guy committed murder in an early release program. So, you know, another case would have been just another.
Would have been like right out of the Michael Dukakis.
Yeah, it would have been a kind of Willie Horton type of situation. Yeah.
Well, you know who definitely calling for an investigation would be Bill Brady, right? Didn't he run against Bill Brady in that election? And he just lost. Yeah. Like, Quinn just lost to Brady by
it was close.
Quinn won by
it was close. And Brady didn't even concede, I think, for a couple of days.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's a terrible story, and if that's the way that it went down, it's that's terrible in the way that, of course, the perpetration of the crime, but also, geez, the cover of the political fallout or trying to avoid the press getting a hold of this, it's bad, too. Maybe not as bad as what the imaginations are running wild on, but still bad.
Yeah, rape in any case, is a bad thing.
And children, too,
or
terrible.
Sex crimes of any kind are a bad thing, but it's something that was a different narrative than what had been speculated.
Ray Long is in studio, investigative reporter, award-winning investigative reporter with Chicago Tribune. We'll take a break here. We'll come back and we'll talk about who's going to be the next state Senate president and a little bit of, let's go down memory lane to some of the state Senate presidents that Ray has covered in the past. As of Sunday, we'll have a new state Senate president in Springfield. It's 720 WGN. Stay with us. Ray Long is here. He's the investigative reporter over at the Chicago Tribune. We're talking about Springfield, a place he knows well, since he was the former state bureau chief there for years. The state Senate president they're doing very Pope-like. Going out to a hotel and a closed door thing on Sunday, and they're gonna pick a new state Senate president now that President Cullerton is retiring. It seems like this is the normal way to do it when they do state senate. This is the average way, the traditional way to do it?
Yeah, I mean, I have covered those kinds of Pope-like settings since 1981, actually. And, the first one I went to, they went into a big room. There was smoke billowing out, the whole thing. I mean, it's not just like somebody making that up. There's actually cigar smoke floating around. And all the reporters were shut out while they all debated inside. And then they were trying to get a number of votes for Phil Rock at that time, the Oak Park guy who was a longtime president. And as it turned out, there was another guy named Harold Washington that year who had just gotten elected to Congress, and he was waiting to try to maneuver the person he wanted into the Senate seat that he was leaving behind. So that was one thing. And there were a couple other little flare-ups, and there are 59 senators in the Senate. You need 30 votes to elect a president. At least that's what everybody thought. And then they didn't have the 30 votes. So the Governor Thompson said, well, before, he didn't say this to the Democrats. He said to the Republicans, do you really need to elect somebody with 30 votes, or can you just go in and
just
do it?
Right.
And he's and at the beginning of each term.
Would this be 1980 or so?
This is 1981. Yeah.
Right.
And so it was, they'd just been elected in 1980. And so he and the Republicans slipped in. They had 29 Republicans.
What a great story.
And then a guy named Frank Savickas, who you'll remember from the Southwest side years ago as a Democrat, he walked through the chamber, and Thompson said, the chair recognizes, Thompson was in the chair, and he says, the chair recognizes Senator Frank Savickas, and there was their argument. They had 30 people in the chamber at that time.
Yeah, right, they did 30.
And nobody was sure whether Savickas was in on some
or just
plot
through, right?
Or whether he was going to the bathroom, as he said, or whatever. But then, David Shapiro from Amboy suddenly was Senate president. And then, of course, they went to the Illinois Supreme Court, which was majority Democratic, and it got flipped back. And they said, you got to have 30 actual votes.
Wow, there's a whole mess.
Yeah.
They can mess that up tomorrow or Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
I think of state Senate presidents. Cullerton had a good run here. This was a couple of years. Mm-hmm. I always think of Pate Phillip as the sort of go-to state Senate president, mm-hmm, right? He was always, mm-hmm, President Phillip was a big deal down there. Mm-hmm. Who do you see as the go-to person who is the state Senate president of record for the state of Illinois?
You know, the guy who had the most respect during the time that I covered it was a guy named Phil Rock. The guy, I mentioned him before, he was the guy who struggled to get the votes there a couple of times, actually. But he was one of these guys who was fair and reached out to both sides and told them, even if he was going to beat him, he was going to tell them how he was going to beat him, so that, you know, they knew what was coming, even.
And like so, running the ball on a cold Sunday. You know it's coming.
Yeah,
you just got to stop
right,
it.
That's right. And so he was just pretty much a stand-up guy, and a lot of people really appreciated that about him. Now, Pate was a powerhouse. There's no doubt about it. But he had a totally different philosophy than Phil Rock, who was a liberal, raised in Jesuit type of education, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so Pate comes more like, you know, the kind of guy who actually said one time, I think it's okay to take a swing at a referee every once in a while if they make a bad call. You know, somebody was talking about legislation saying, no, you shouldn't be able to do that. But, you know, sometimes you have to give them a pop.
Was there a point, and, you know, I'm glad you're here, you know, as I'm a young student of Springfield politics, but was there a point when the state Senate president was more powerful than the Speaker of the House?
Yes, there was. That was Russ Arrington was one of the more powerful ones. That was back in the 60s, and that was actually before the 1970 Constitution. They had a different setup. They had, I think it was 58 members at the time, but Arrington was a real powerhouse. He controlled many Republican seats, and they actually had times when Governor Ogilvy, who was a Republican and decided, you know, the state needs money, he called in Arrington, as the story goes, and said, you know, we're going to have an income tax. And Arrington, according to the story or the legend, said, well, who's going to carry that? And Ogilvy says, you are. And Arrington goes, well, okay.
Okay,
and
then
pushed it through.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know.
Something you'd want on your record, the first income tax, right?
Well, you know. It
someone has to do it.
Yeah, somebody has to do it. Sometimes you have to stand up and take the tough vote.
Okay, so when you think about it, this last state Senate president and Speaker of the House, they're both from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
How often does that happen, where you get two politicians who are leading their chambers that are both from the city of Chicago? Because before that, I think it was Lee Daniels, it was Pate, mm-hmm, Phillip. Those were not Chicagoans. Those were suburbanites.
Right.
But but not necessarily Chicago proper.
Right. And Pate Phillip, of course, was a DuPage County. Lee Daniels was DuPage County.
Yeah.
So that was they had for a brief shining moment there, both chambers, where, you know, that was the one blemish on Madigan's 30-plus year run was 94 election, where he lost a term from speakership, and they had complete Republican control in 95 and 96, but now it's just the opposite. It's complete Democratic control. Phil Rock was from Oak Park. Mike Madigan, of course, is from Chicago. And so now the discussion is whether Kim Lightford, who is from Maywood, or Don Harmon,
Oak Park, right,
who is from Oak Park, should be the Senate president this time.
And we'll talk about both of them right now, but beyond the personalities and whether or not who's experienced and who should run the Senate for the Democrats. It's so interesting to me that it's Maywood and Oak Park. They're right next to each other. Right. Those are areas that they probably are. I mean, they're Democrats, so they probably get along. But they're also rivals in the sense that those communities are kind of right next to each other.
Yeah, they are, and they have a different set of demographics. Maywood has a more of a machine type, old type of machine type of effort, and. You know, they talk about how Oak Park is much more liberal than you know, almost any place else, except for maybe Champaign, right, where they have all the professors and all that kind of stuff. And demographers look at the numbers coming out of Champaign, and they think they're in some kind of socialist country or something. But
those university professors.
Yeah, that's right. But anyway, it's a rivalry. And Kim Lightford came in, and she was elected in '98, and Harmon was elected, I believe, around 2002. So they're both veterans. Harmon was very close to John Kellerton, who's leaving, and tried to kind of work that magic with Kellerton. They even had the doors rearranged so they could walk from office to office rather than go out into the main hallway and have to deal with the riffraff of the reporters, you know. So
and whenever I hear that, whenever I know you at home hear that, you're like, I paid for that?
Yeah.
Are you sure that I paid for these guys to change their doors so they could be buddies? They could be office buddies?
Yeah.
There's a lot of pressure on the Democrats right now. They may not say it, but there has been a brimming culture of corruption, or at least perceived corruption, when it comes to what's happening in Springfield since they've had supermajorities. We obviously, with the Speaker of the House, Mike Madigan, is constantly in the news. You know, 6 degrees of Mike Madigan.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have to get this right? I mean, is it important that they make sure that both of these candidates are squeaky clean, and both of these candidates for Senate president are not going to be showing up on somebody's wire in 2 months?
Well, you know, that would be a good question. Maybe they should be interviewing Terry Link to determine who has shown up here. But the reality is... you know, you have to cut a lot of deals down there, and there are going to be some things that have upset people for whatever reason, that you had to compromise on a bill here or there along the way, or go out and you didn't raise enough funds for this person or that person. One of the arguments Harmon has is that he's a good fundraiser for the Senate Democrats and can help, push the cash around. And Kim Lightford has said, well, she can do that too, but she doesn't quite have the same numbers, but she's a good negotiator, and she's carried some of the big bills, like in education, etc. And even Harmon can claim his own set of legislative victories too. So it's going to be a boxing match here.
Do you miss camping out in front of the hotel waiting for them to come out?
Well, you know, the sciatica in my leg does not miss it. I'll say that. You know, every once in a while when I have to go back on a stakeout and get that sharp pain up the leg, I think, well, you know, maybe this isn't for me anymore.
Ray Long, 847. Mary, it's a great listener here at WGN. Ray, listening to the show, says Ray Long is one of my favorite guests on WGN.
Right. Oh, great.
There you
go. Great.
Huh?
She's one of my favorite listeners.
There you go. Ray Long, investigative reporter, award-winning investigative reporter at the Chicago Tribune, talking about Springfield stories that happened this week and today and are going to happen on Sunday as they elect a new Senate president for the Democrats in Springfield. Ray, great to see you, man.
Good to see
Thanks
you,
Thanks for
too.
Coming in.